A year and a half ago, I officiated at the wedding of my son Chad and his bride Brittany. It was at a beautiful lake resort in the Cascade Mountains in Oregon, and it was a wonderful day. When I was doing the preparation for the wedding with Chad and Brittany, I told them the same thing I tell all couples that I prepare for marriage, and that is, get everything ready before the wedding. Do all the plans and all the preparation in the months and weeks that lead up to the wedding. And when you wake up on your wedding day, forget all about that. And just focus on being in the moment for that day. And this is your big day. And so don't worry about the details and all the little things that have to be done. Let somebody else worry about that. And you just be present for your big day. This is your joyful day. If something goes wrong, which it inevitably will, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. The most important thing is to be in the moment. And I think they were. You know, there are so many things that can go wrong at a wedding. And we've all heard stories of weddings that have gone bad. 5 or 6 years ago, I was officiating at a wedding in Green River. And everything was ready. The guests had all showed up. The groomsmen were there, and the bridesmaids were ready, and the tables were set for the reception, but no bride. And we kept hearing that the bride was coming, but she didn't show up, and it was 40 minutes after the time we were supposed to start when she finally showed up. She looked beautiful, but she was a little flustered. And so we started the wedding and everything was fine. Things happen, you know. Nothing ever goes exactly like it was prepared or planned. It's inevitable. Weddings are poignant moments. They can be very emotional. And oftentimes you'll see people cry at a wedding, and you can see even big, tough men wiping away a tear. And why is that? Why is it that weddings bring out such feelings in us? I think there's a lot of reasons. One reason is it's just sentiment. You know, this is our little girl grown up, and our little boy, not a little boy or little girl anymore. And part of it, I think, is a recognition of a loss, that these two are going to have their own life now, and they don't need us anymore. So there's going to be a loss. Part of it, I think, is the recognition of reality that the honeymoon is going to end at some point. And there's going to be the inevitable compromises, arguments, laundry, bills to pay, and reality is going to set in at some point. We wish that the wedding day, the joy of the day, would go on forever, but it's going to come to an end. And part of our emotion at a wedding is because of it's a reminder of our own weddings and the vows we made and the dreams and the hopes we had and how it turned out. So there's all this stuff that bubbles up at a wedding that brings emotion to the surface. I think we want the joyful moment to last forever. We want joy not only for this couple, but joy for everyone, everywhere. The philosopher Nietzsche said, all joy wants eternity, wants deep, deep eternity. And that's what we're feeling at a wedding. Today's gospel is a wedding, the wedding in Cana. Jesus and his mother and the disciples are there. And while they're there at the wedding, the wine runs out. This is a disaster because in Middle Eastern culture, the family is supposed to supply a wedding feast, and it's embarrassing if you don't have a good enough feast. It may go on for days and days. So you've got to have lots of wine and lots of food, and the wine runs out. It can be humiliating when this happens. So Jesus' mother Mary prods him, and he eventually goes into action. He tells his servants to take the 6 stone water jars and fill them with water. And then he tells the servants to take some water out of the stone water jar and take it to the best man, who's the chief steward. And when the chief steward tastes it, it's wine. He says, "This is the best wine we've had in this whole party. Why did you save the best wine until last?" So Jesus turns the water into wine so the joyful feast can go on. There's not going to be any lack of celebration. Well, the story is found only in the Gospel of John. It's not in Matthew, Mark, or Luke. And John is a very symbolic gospel. Sometimes the first part of the Gospel of John is called the Book of Signs because Jesus does miracles. And the miracles are not just impressive for their own sake, but they point to something deeper in the Gospel of John. And that's what's happening in this story. It says that Jesus revealed his glory with this miracle, and his disciples believed. They saw the miracle, and they believed. That was what was going on at a deeper level. There were 6 stone jars. Why were there 6? Well, we think of the number 6, we think of the 6 days of creation, and on the 7th day, God rested. So when Jesus appeared, the 6 days have been completed, and now Jesus is going to bring us into the 7th day of God's rest, God's day. They were stone jars for the Jewish rites of purification. It was a ritual that the Jewish people had to once a year cleanse themselves and then rededicate themselves, renew their commitment to the Jewish law. And by Jesus turning the water into wine, what he's saying is that he has come to replace the old ritual with a new reality, the new spiritual reality that Jesus brings. Water is ordinary, but wine is a symbol of the Spirit, a symbol of transformation. So the ordinary has been turned into the extraordinary. And so I think what John is saying is that Jesus is the source of the Spirit. A priest told us once about his time in seminary. The biblical scholar Christer Stendahl, a very famous guy, was going to visit the seminary and speak, and they needed someone to pick him up from the airport. And so this seminarian said, "I'll do it," because he wanted to talk with Christer Stendahl and ask him questions. So before the trip, he made a list of questions that he thought were very profound and insightful, and he was going to ask them to the man when he arrived. But he turned out to be this wonderful, kindly old gentleman. And he asked the seminarian questions about his life and about his family and about his calling and about his ministry, and he didn't have any time to ask his questions. They got almost to the seminary, and he said, "Do you have any advice for me as I start out in my ministry?" And Christer Stendahl thought about it, and he said, "Don't forget about Jesus." He said, "As a priest, you're going to have so many things to worry about and so many things to think about that it's easy to forget where the source of everything came from. So my one advice to you is don't forget Jesus." I think that's what this gospel is saying to us, that Jesus is the source of the Spirit. It's the source of everything we do. He takes water and he turns it into wine. He takes the ordinary and he turns it into the extraordinary. He takes our physical lives and he helps us become spiritual people. You know, the miracle at Cana is a lot like the feeding of the 5,000. In the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus takes a few loaves of bread and he makes an abundant feast so that everybody has plenty. And at the wedding at Cana, he takes the water and he makes it into 120 gallons of wine so that everyone has abundant wine. And we remember these two stories when we come to communion. We eat the bread of abundant life, and we drink the wine of abundant spirit. You might say that every Sunday we're having our own wedding feast. And the feast has been going on for 2,000 years, and the wine hasn't run out yet. Amen.